Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Jack Kerouac's famous novel about a long road trip over open highways was called The Road. A new film based on the novel is out, and we'll get a review today. Two other films out this week use the days of the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Vietnam War as backdrops. One of them is titled The Sapphires, and it's inspired by a true story about four young Australian Aboriginal singers who entertained U.S. troops in Vietnam back in 1968. Well, lots of art, independent, and documentary films to talk about today. And we'll also talk about the upcoming Kansas City Film Fest and the death of famed film critic Roger Ebert. Our intrepid reviewers are film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, always good to have you.
Thank you very much,
Steve. It's a Friday when you're here, so I'm always happy to see you.
Thank you.
KCUR's own Steve Walker is back.
Steven. Hey, Steve.
And Bob Butler, the former film critic for The Star, who now works at the Kansas City Public Library. You can read his movie reviews at butlerscinemascene.com. Bob, how are you?
Good morning. Great.
Well, Roger Ebert, the famed film critic, died on Thursday. What impact did he have on the world of film criticism, Bob?
Immense.
Let's
say, just for the sake of argument, that the best film critic in the world works as a lonely blogger or on some daily or little small town paper. We're not talking about what makes a great critic. We're talking here about a guy who took criticism and elevated it in the public mind higher than anyone ever thought it could be. Before Siskel and Ebert, people didn't realize that it was okay to disagree about movies. That sounds tremendously naive now.
No kidding. But
that was the way people were back then. They hated critics because they thought the critics knew it all. And if you disagreed with the critic, well, made you feel bad, blah, blah, blah. Then you saw these two guys who were supposed to be great critics going at it tooth and nail, and you went, wait a minute, you can disagree about, you know.
Bob, he made him accessible. The other issue was you had these highbrow film critics writing for these lofty publications. You studied film criticism in school, and you learned about the French critics. But he brought film to conversation to the masses. Mm-hmm. And I thought, growing up, if it's on PBS, it's got to be good. It's got to be smart. My only frustration with him over the years is, and I kick myself often when I listen to the show, is that he took himself a little too seriously sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish he had a little sharper sense of humor and had a little bit more fun in his, you know, debates with.
But, you know, there had never been a famous household word movie critic before Roger Ebert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Francois Truffaut. I mean, come on.
I'm talking about run of the mill Americans.
Yeah.
And
right.
Here's the thing about
Sorry,
it. There never will be another one. He nailed it at a time when print was shifting to television. Since then, television has shifted to the internet.
How often did you agree with his criticism, Steve?
Well, a lot. And mm-hmm. I would go see things that I hadn't heard of, or he would review something that opened in Chicago and not here yet, and I would always take notes. Even when I was in high school, I was going to indies and foreign films because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about him, too, I'm remembering, is he would trumpet as with equal fervor the tiniest little documentary or the biggest blockbuster. He loved movies so much, and when he hated them, he was very funny, I thought. And he never dumbed it down. For the audience, whether he was talking about Star Wars or what was the Hoop Dreams, the documentary that he really kind of put on the map.
I think I see this as part of our responsibility. What Siskel and Ebert did was to bring films to the attention of our audience that we thought were fantastic. I mean, we're out there in the trenches watching good, bad, indifferent. But when we find something we love to talk about it and share it with people. And that's what he did.
So definitely a passing, at least Bob, in your chosen
monumental
profession,
right? I think, yeah. Really. End of an era. And like I say, no critic, I think, will ever be as influential as Roger Ebert.
I drank the Kool-Aid of Pauline Kael, who was, in my mind, the greatest critic ever, who was with The New Yorker for hundreds of years.
Well, I'm not talking about greatest. I'm talking about influential.
Influential, yeah. No, that's
and
cool.
And filmmakers agree. That's the thing. I mean, you go to them, and we heard a lot of those tributes yesterday. A lot of filmmakers said, you know, he meant a lot to us.
Well, the Kansas City Film Fest is coming up, just in a few days here, right? About 5 days next week. It's going to be staged at the Alamo Draft House on Main Street. Who wants to talk about it? How significant an event is this?
Well, we hope it's growing. There are about 113 films, short films, feature films that are going to be shown.
Wow.
What I think is of value, it's a three-day event at the Draft House, April 10th through the 14th. Are these seminars that they're going to have. So if you're an aspiring filmmaker, I really encourage you to go see. There's a seminar on crowdfunding hits and misses, women making movies. We Are Superman will be a panel discussion about this documentary about the educational system. Another seminar, you're almost done with your film, now what? So these are of tremendous value. I think they're all going to be on Saturday. The best thing to do, I mean, we can't go through the entire list, but is to go to kcfilmfest.org. You'll get all the information about their parties and events and screenings, and it'll be worth your while.
Are there any films that you would recommend that you know are going to be screened?
One that I enjoyed was The Discoverers, a film by Justin Schwartz.
And speaking of Justin Schwartz, we have him on the line right now.
What
again, that film will be screened. Absolutely. Right. It's a bittersweet comedy about a dysfunctional family discovering each other against the backdrop of a Lewis and Clark reenactment trek. And Justin Schwartz, so nice to have you. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's an interesting premise for a film. Where'd you get the idea, Justin?
A while back I was sort of searching for ideas, and I wrote something in my journal about, you know, you can't divorce your family even if you don't get along. And that becomes something that Griffin Dunn says in the film. And it sort of became this inspiration for a story to explore family and multi-generational family. And I also had always wanted to do a story about historical reenactors. I thought they were an interesting mix of community theater with mixed with citizen historians and, you know, an interesting subculture. So I somehow melded the two. And, you know, I was also interested in this idea of family history and, you know, how we all understand our own histories in different ways when we grow up in a family. And so this became like a vehicle for me to explore a family sort of coming together and finding themselves on this journey. And then the Lewis and Clark time period and, you know, that locating that specific era, you know, was about, you know, the film is, you know, the title is kind of a giveaway. It's a film about discovery and personal discovery and discovering history and the road and in America. And so I was looking for a time period that, you know, we've seen a lot of Civil War reenactor stories, but I hadn't really seen anything about Lewis and Clark, which to me is this, you know, it's this moment when we were first sort of venturing into the unknown and,
right.
and you know, they were discovering new plants and animals. They were botanists. They were cartographers. They were going into this undiscovered terrain. And, you know, it's such a remarkable story. And the more, you know, I learned about it in grade school, and the more I did research, I discovered there were all these things that were kind of left out of the grand narrative, which became fodder for investigation in the film, like, you know, like Meriwether Lewis, that he, you know, took his own life at a very tender age. And, you know, and he was kind of one of the first sort of modern existential figures in our history.
You know, Justin, my sense of this film is it has a little bit of Little Miss Sunshine in it.
Yeah, no, I think anytime, you know, you have a family on the road and there's comedy, you get that. You know, we definitely don't, we embrace that comparison.
Justin, this is Robert Butler. I'm sure I'm the only person at this table that owns two flintlock rifles.
That's correct.
Yeah, but I'm curious. As I watched this movie, my jaw kept dropping at the cast members. I'm going, oh my, look at the people in this movie. How did you attract so many incredible actors to your film?
Yeah, it was a real privilege to work with such an amazing cast. You know, I had gone to film school at Columbia University in New York, and I had met a casting director that I worked with who became Woody Allen's casting director, and she really loved the script. You know, we had kept in touch. I'd made a bunch of shorts that I had a lot of festival success, and so when it was time to make my first feature, you know, she was the first person. Her name is Patricia Kerrigan de Certo, and, And all of the agencies kind of fell in love with the script. And thankfully, all of the actors, we signed kind of Griffin and Colin Martin for sort of the first two of sort of building out this family. And then it was, we kind of had our pick of talent. And it was, I've Griffin Dunn is such an amazing actor, someone, he hasn't been in a leading role for a while. And for this character, it's kind of a middle-aged coming-of-age story. We were looking for someone who had that ability to have comedy and pathos, which is, the tone of the film, and sort of embody that. And Griffin is he has such a wide range. I think he's like a modern-day Buster Keaton, the physical comedy, but his, dramatic pathos and emotional realism that sort of pervades through the film was really amazing. And then, it was also a thrill to work with Stuart Margolin from The Rockford Files and John C. McGinley from, Oliver Stone films and Scrubs and, Devin Gray from American Horror Story and Cara Buono from Mad Men and Rima Walker from Compliance and Ann Dowd from Compliance. And we had such a big cast, I sometimes forget some of them. Becky Ann Baker, who, from Judd Apatow's work. And I probably left some. Oh, and David Rashi, of course, who is such a brilliant comedian.
Justin, Cynthia Haynes here has a question for you as well.
Well, it's just a comment, Justin. I don't know if you're aware, but Stuart Margolin from The Rockford Files is scheduled to accept a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Kansas City Film Fest. So that's another special event.
Do we know when The Discoverers is going to be screened?
No, we don't. But if you go to...
It's going to be screening on Wednesday
Thank you.
Wednesday evening. If you go to kcfilmfest.org, you can come up with a complete schedule, right, Steve?
My question and observation is that it's just beautifully shot. You start in Chicago, but then most of the film is out in the woods, and it's just really lovely, Justin.
Thank you. I had the privilege of working with a DP. His name is Christopher Bovelt, who is Harris Savidi's protege, and so he had worked on Gus Van Sant's movies and Spike Jonze movies and David Fincher movies, and just a real talent. For us, this is a kind of a return to the pastoral story. So it's about, family that starts in the city, goes into the woods, and sort of in this Thoreau kind of way find themselves. So it was really important that, we feel penned in the city, but then that sort of lyrical, sort of early David Gordon Green or Terrence Malick kind of getting seduced by the natural world comes through. So both the audience and the characters in the film can kind of get swept up in this experience.
All right. Well, Justin Schwartz, again, the filmmaker, he's out with The Discoverers. It screens on Wednesday evening as part of the Kansas City Film Fest.
If I could do one final plug, actually. Today, we were actually waiting to announce that we're going to be launching a Kickstarter campaign to finance the theatrical release of our film. We hope to be in more than a dozen cities, movie theaters in cities across the country by the end of the year. So folks can go to discoverersmovie.com or facebook.com, The Discoverers. We will be releasing some exclusive footage and a tease of the movie. So people will, hopefully get excited about our film and sort of join our adventure across the country.
Well, Justin, a pleasure to have you, and all the best with The Discoverers, okay?
Thank you so much. It's good. We're on an 8th film festival tour for the month of April, but we're very excited to come to Kansas City. I had actually done some research. I met with reenactors in St. Charles when I was doing some of my research. So it'll be great to come back to Missouri. So thanks so much for having me.
You bet. All the best. Again, that's Justin Schwartz. His new film is The Discoverers. Okay, if you're just joining us, we're talking about some of the latest art, independent, and foreign films now out. We're visiting with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Let's move to some films that are opening today. And this first one up, Bob, is titled The Sapphires. It's inspired by a true story, a dramatic comedy about four young Australian Aboriginal singers who entertain U.S. troops in Vietnam back in 68.
Well, this is actually a very lovable movie. It is not a perfect movie. It has flaws, but even the flaws kind of make it lovable, which is, something I can embrace, being a seriously flawed person on my own right. this was directed by a guy named Wayne Blair, and he's done mostly TV in Australia. True story. In 1968, three sisters and their cousin, all Aborigines, were hired by the United States Army to tour Vietnam doing a soul review. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're not American and they're not American African-Americans, they had to be taught how to do this by a by a drunken white guy played by Chris O'Dowd. Now, Chris O'Dowd, you may remember him from Bridesmaids. He played the droll, and I mean droll with a capital D, state trooper who's sort of following Kristen Wiig around in that movie. He almost stole the movie from some very funny people, and in this, he is spectacular. He is just hilarious. Hmm.
I found it, Bob. I mean, I enjoyed their talent, certainly, and I thought the racism part of the story was really interesting that I wasn't aware of necessarily, yeah. And I'm ashamed of that.
The Australian Aborigines were treated like American Indians plus blacks. Pretty awful.
Rabbit-proof fence.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I never saw that film, actually. But what, besides the talent on display and how I wished I could see a documentary about the treatment of the Aboriginal people, this was not anything I'd ever not seen. I mean, all the cliches were there about whether it's the thing that you do or any movie about a pop group has the stony-faced audition judges, who were, of course, won over.
Sure.
At the end, the dream girls like friction between the sisters about who should sing lead. Nothing we hadn't seen before. Chris O'Dowd
it's like
was
the commitments.
Any movie about a pop group has all of these cliches in it. Ultimately, for me, it left me cold. I didn't care about anyone in the film.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And Bob, what else about this film did you like? Because you're a lot higher on it than Steve is.
Well, Steve is right that there's plenty wrong with the movie. It's a very low-keyed, easygoing experience. And actually, that's what I found enjoyable about it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to think too hard about it. The music is really a lot of fun. The costuming, the capturing of the time.
Right. Those girls can really sing.
They can really sing. And I'll tell you what, I found actually that some of the social commentary in the movie was a bit heavy-handed.
Yeah,
I didn't like
that
as much as I just liked them standing there front and center and belting out, you know, Motown.
Right.
If you're looking for a highly enjoyable but not particularly challenging night at the movies, bingo.
There you go. I will give you that.
I'm going to just flash back to the Kansas City Film Fest. There's a documentary they're going to show, 20 Feet from Stardom, which I think is going to become a huge hit. But it's the story of the backup singers in Motown,
right?
What they went through. And it is the most entertaining, and you have a chance to see it April 10th through the 14th. I saw it at the True False Film Festival.
Oh, they are showing that?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at their list
20
lately.
20 Feet from
Stardom. Okay.
Well, that's a good one to think about.
Up.
We have a clip here from the Sapphires, Bob.
This is Chris O'Dowd's character trying to explain to his four Aboriginal singers why they need to give up Merle Haggard and get deeply into rhythm and blues.
Girls, when I met you, you were doing your whole country and western thing, and that's fine. We all make mistakes. But here's where we learn from that mistake. Country and western music is about loss. Soul music is also about loss. But the difference is, in country and western music, they've lost, they've given up, and they're just at home whining about it. In soul music, they're struggling to get it back, and they haven't given up. So every note that passes through your lips should have the tone of a woman who's grasping and fighting and desperate to retrieve what's been taken from her. You understand? Now, what it is that you're searching for, that's up to you. I'm just here to get ye there, you know? I'll take you there. There is a place called the Apollo Theater. It's where dreams are made, where legends are born. I'll take you there. I can see you girls singing in places like that. There and in the Rainbow, in the Olympia, the best rooms in the world.
As Chris Dowd's character says in this, I may be a little pale on the outside, but inside my blood runs Negro.
He's from the Sapphires.
He's going to be a big star someday, I think.
Huh. Let's move on, Cynthia, to a film, Ginger and Rosa. This is set in London, 1962, during the Cuban Missile Crisis. What's all this about?
Well, I was excited to see this film because it was directed by Sally Potter, one of my favorite filmmakers. She did Orlando back in 1992. She cast Elle Fanning as a young gal named Ginger, who's a pacifist. And Fanning is the younger version of her sister, Dakota. Actually, she appeared in several films with her sister. over time, and I think that was a mistake. This is just one young actress who really couldn't carry the weight of this rather serious story. I didn't realize until I read Bob's review that the other young woman in the film, Alice Engel, is Sally Potter's daughter.
No, Jane Campion's daughter.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jane Campion's daughter. So, anyway, she plays the wilder of the duo, and it's another one of those stories about teenagers in love, and these just happen to be two young girls in love with each other. It's about female friendship, but again, when we bring in the politics about and religion and dreams for the future, it just doesn't work. It doesn't mesh as an effective film.
What's the point, Cynthia, of this film being set during the Cuban Missile Crisis? What was that about?
Well, it's to show these girls who want to engage with the world, that there's tremendous anxiety about a nuclear holocaust, and so they're trying to come to terms with that and at the same time become young women.
And wasn't Ginger born on the day of the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima?
I don't remember, but that might be the case.
A little heavy-handed. I saw it 3 months ago, and I don't remember a thing about it.
Annette Bening is in this film.
Annette Bening, I love. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started on Annette Bening. But she's not in it for more than 5 minutes. And all I remember about it from 3 months ago is Elle Fanning crying on cue about 12 times. I don't remember it. I mean, it's forgettable.
I think Elle Fanning actually is pretty good in this myself. I'm going to disagree with you two on that. I wasn't swept away by the movie. It's about personal betrayal. Rosa betrays her friend Ginger in a very specific way. What I found interesting about the movie is the comment it makes about how fierce social activism may be born of an inner need that needs to be filled by something. The more her home life cracks up, the more Ginger becomes dedicated to her ban the bomb activities. You ever run into somebody who's fiercely, that way, and you wonder, gee, I wonder what they're making up for? Well,
there you go.
Not recently, Bob, but that's an interesting take on it.
What's the clip we have here, Cynthia Haynes?
A conversation between the two characters, Ginger and Rosa. You'll get a sense of the film.
It says here that a girl's most important possession is a bubbly personality.
Interesting. Do you think Simone de Beauvoir has a bubbly personality?
Who?
That French writer. She's an existentialist.
Maybe she hasn't read Girl. It says here that boys don't like girls who are too serious.
Oh. Well, even so, did I tell you I've decided to be a poet?
Thought you were already.
I think we get the idea. Yeah, okay, that's Ginger and Rosa. Okay, well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about some of the latest art, independent, and foreign films now opening. We'll get to The Gatekeepers. That's a film getting a lot of buzz. Six Souls, On the Road, and a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about the ethics of testing children for adult-onset diseases, you can find that in our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. On Monday's program, there's Peanuts, Cracker Jack, and even some baseball to play. We'll be coming to you live from Kauffman Stadium as the Royals prepare to play their home opener against the feared Minnesota Twins, who I guess aren't really all that feared so much this year, are they, Bob? Yeah. This hour, we're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films. We're visiting with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. We've gone through a bunch. We'll have their three to see, their picks, for you to go on our website, kcur.org, their recommendations for the three best films to go out and see this weekend following our show today. How about a film, Six Souls, Steve Walker? It's a forensic psychiatrist played by Julianne Moore who discovers all of one of her patients' multiple personalities our murder victims.
Ever have emotions you can't explain, Steve?
Yeah, I think I'm having one right now.
That's the opening line. This is on my three to see list because it's one of those so bad it's good. It's really dumb.
Wow.
It's really dumb. It's 3 years old. It's been sitting on a shelf somewhere. but it scared the bejesus out of me. And
really?
I was watching it late at night and shut my blinds. I mean, seriously, she plays this psychiatrist whose new patient is Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who people know from The Tudors, I would think, who plays a multiple personality. He starts the film as David, this meek kid in a wheelchair, and then becomes Adam, who's not. And his personalities are set off by a phone, and she's on her phone constantly. It's kind of one of those dumb movies that...
Is that what's going on with my kids?
I guess. Yeah. Where she's on the phone all the time. Her life, even though she has a child and is a parent and has a responsible job somewhere, we never see any of that. Everything she's doing is at the expense of her kid and any outside life. But yeah, Rhys-Meyers is very... Myers, I guess, is very good and very scary. And then it you know how I described in a review I put online of this that you've heard people described as the kind they suck the air out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
What this resolves toward is this backwoods clan that can literally suck the soul out of people.
Mm.
And then they stuff dirt in their mouths to make sure it doesn't try to get back in them. So it goes in all these weird directions.
Yikes.
Julianne Moore is a great actress. And is,
yes, she is.
Working here for her dutiful paycheck. One more line that's really awful. Moore is saying about her daughter towards the end, a doctor can't help her now.
There you go.
It's that kind
she
of trash.
She needs a film editor.
It's that kind of trash, but it's fun trash.
Give us a little taste of what
here's a clip.
Film, yeah.
Julianne Moore and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers have gone to a river for some reason in the woods. She takes him as David in the wheelchair, and then she turns around, is on her phone again, and he shows up as Adam.
Hi, Adam.
Who is Adam?
My name is Dr. Caroline Jessup.
Yeah, we'll get to you later.
Adam.
I asked who Adam was.
Adam is a patient of mine. All right. You feel confused?
Confused? You don't tell me when to be confused, lady. You're not the one who keeps waking up in strange goddamn places with no idea how you got there. So I asked you a question. Where am I? And why would you think I was Adam?
You're at Walker's Mill. And you look like Adam.
It's not predictable why he is the way he is. And it's very stylishly directed by these... they're a team who work as the names Marland and Stein. They're from Sweden and do commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I went to their website, actually. They have a great website of all these innovative commercials they've done. So it looks great. It's been sitting on the shelf for 3 years. The Weinstein Company is releasing it in a few cities today.
Well, that film, again, is titled Six Souls and Steve Walker. I have three words for you. No, thank you. Okay,
and the play on the title, they're
yes.
Very sick souls.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I'm let's elevate this conversation with a film that's getting a lot of critically acclaimed buzz. This film is titled The Gatekeepers. It was nominated for a Best Documentary Oscar, Cynthia Haynes. It's an examination of 45 years of Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There's been a whole bunch of that, and this film is supposed to be very, very good. Is it?
I don't think I've ever said this before, but I think everyone on the planet should see this movie.
Wow.
If you want to understand what's going on in the Middle East right now, you really should see this movie.
Mm.
An Israeli director, Dror Moreh, I believe, interviews six former heads of the Israeli security agency, known as Shin Bet. It was established in 1949, and it focused basically on internal affairs. But since the war of 1967, their mandate has involved counterterrorism and intelligence gathering in Gaza and the West Bank. And Shin Bet answers to no one but the prime minister. The interviews with these men are candid. They're extremely critical of their country. Virtually all the men favor curtailment of the Jewish settlements in the West Bank and a two-state solution. Now,
that's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
I'm going to make the point that this is a documentary, which does not mean it's objective. There is one point of view that's being expressed throughout this film. There are critics of this documentary whose voices aren't heard.
And they say what?
totally disagree with these men, that, you know, if in fact they acquiesce, that, you know, it's going to be the end of this, the state of Israel. So there's differing opinions about what the future holds. But all these men who were interviewed, these were all heads. It's like having the heads of the CIA.
Yeah, for six of them. Six yeah, of and the they're past all elderly. Of, now,
and
not
yeah, they
all,
look but... like a bunch of grandfathers there.
And
but
these
they...
are guys that ordered assassinations. They are not sissies.
That's right.
No, no, no. And, but the thing that's fascinating is, yes, they have some guilt to a degree. Yes, they have mixed feelings about what they did. But as one of the men says, you forget about morality. He would be in a mind state, and the conflict was such that any guilt he would have or complicated feelings went away as he did his job. And one thing that I'd never seen such graphic footage of, the aftermath of like a bomb, a suicide bomber on a bus. It's
graphic.
It's graphic. But you think about these older men sitting and talking to the camera about their lives and their jobs. I wouldn't think it would be so compelling. It's very good.
But all these guys are worried about the current state of Israeli politics and the impact of the right wing inside Israel.
Yes.
That's having on the future.
And this
of
film
them.
Is just that these different former heads of Shin Bet just sitting before the camera, sort of like the Robert McNamara documentary a number of years ago, just talking and answering questions.
Yes, but there is a lot of news footage, and when they're talking about specific bombings or specific elements of the Six-Day War, we see footage of that. So it's not just these talking heads.
So this film was worthy of the praise that it's received and worthy of the Oscar nomination.
Yes, I agree. I think so.
Okay, again, that film is titled The Gatekeepers. Let's move on to another film here, On the Road, Bob Butler. It's the film adaptation of Jack Kerouac's novel about a road trip.
Well, about several road trips over several years. You know, it's interesting. This book came out when? 55, 56, around in there.
Sounds right.
There's never been a movie of it.
Mm-mm.
And the reason is pretty clear. The book is a stream of consciousness thing. There's no plot there. There are characters that drift in and out of the young narrator's life.
It's like jazz.
It is like jazz, very much like jazz. Upon trying to read it, Truman Capote famously stated, "That's not writing, that's typing." But Walter Salles, a Brazilian director, most recently he did The Motorcycle Diaries, has done what I think to be an exemplary job of taking an impossible-to-film movie and making it work. Now, it's not ever going to be popular for the simple reason that there is no plot per se. The character who represents Jack Kerouac falls under the influence of a delightful but troubled wild man. Now, in real life, this guy's name was Neil Cassady. In the book, he's known as Dean Moriarty. He's sort of like a proto James Dean without all the affectation. He's a party animal, a womanizer, a drinker, a druggie.
A hustler. Who goes both ways
as
well.
He's played by Garrett Hedlund, an actor who previously was known mostly for being in the lamentable Tron Legacy. He is unbelievable. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, I think he's really terrific. He was also in Country Strong, the country movie with Paltrow. He played the young Tim McGraw wannabe character.
I've tried to throw that one.
Oh, I didn't mind that film. But anyway, he's got charisma to burn.
And an actress who does not have charisma to burn is
Kristen
Stewart. Is horrible.
Spare me her for the rest of my being.
She ruined the film for me, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
I won't go that far. Now,
No.
The film has been very beautifully made, and it gets into the rhythms of these road trips. There's a character based on Allen Ginsberg.
Right.
Viggo Mortensen shows up as William H. Burroughs.
Yep.
So there's some interesting stuff going on here.
And there's like Amy Adams shows up as Burroughs' wife. I mean, in these little cameos. And Viggo and Amy Adams are really terrific. And this Kirsten Dunst plays Dean's first wife.
Yes.
She does a nice job, too. So they gathered a lot of interesting people. I agree with Cynthia. Kristen Stewart is not one of them.
But it's about the generation of people that didn't know where they were going. They just had to go. They were just, you know, movement was everything.
They were driven by this beat inside of them.
And that's it.
And there's a lot of scenes of these
beat
parties.
Generation,
a lot of scenes of parties with all kinds of races gathered together and all kinds of drugs and all kinds of sexual partnerships happen. And
are you talking about Spring Breakers?
No, not yet. Not yet. They're very funny. I don't know what the clip is, Bob. Do you?
What is the clip, Bob?
Well,
Kristen Stewart and Saul Paradise or her character is having a conversation.
Okay,
with
that's the Kerouac character,
right.
Saul Paradise.
Talking about Dean. Yeah.
From
okay.
On the Road.
Can't you wait tomorrow, Frisco?
I don't care. Dean's going to leave me anyway.
When are you going to go back to Denver?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I could go back to my fiancé.
Fiancé?
He's a sailor. He's been away a while. He's nice.
That's good.
I wish Dean wasn't so crazy now.
You could be wishing that the rest of your life.
I just want a house. Baby. You know, something normal. I really do want that.
That, again, is from On the Road. And, you know, I get the sense in this batch of movies we're talking about this month that there are some, you know, good films here, okay films, but nothing that's absolutely through the stratosphere here.
A lot of them that really got dumped. I mean, they
this is the time of year when the great films typically don't hit, and we're sort of experiencing that right now.
I think Garrett Hedlund will be a star faster than Chris O'Dowd. And I only say that because he's so believable at playing this character who, any room he enters into, everyone is drawn to him.
Yeah.
Because he's beautiful, but because he's got this kind of vibe that's hip. And,
energy.
Yeah.
Okay, again, that film, On the Road. All right, we're reviewing the latest art and independent and foreign films. Let's move on to Stoker, Bob Butler. It's Uncle Charlie comes to live with his niece and her unstable mother, and trouble ensues.
Well, if that sounds at all like Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt, yay team. Park Chan-wook is a Korean director. This is his first English-language movie. He made an extraordinarily weird but fascinating movie called Old Boy a few years ago. It's sort of Southern Gothic in the Tennessee Williams sense, widowed mother, lover hanging around. It's very much Hitchcock to the point that there are stuffed birds that remind you of Psycho. It's an homage to Hitchcock. Now, the premise. Young India Stoker, played by Mia Wasikowska, who seems to be in everything nowadays, her daddy dies in a mysterious car accident, and at the funeral, who should show up but the Uncle Charlie, played by Matthew Good, who no one knew existed. Uncle Charlie moves in with the girl and her mother, played by Nicole Kidman in her Southern Belle going mad mode.
Blanche Dubois, right.
Starts making the moves on both of these women, and at the same time, people start vanishing. Uncle Charlie may be more to him than we know. We got a clip here that is the sheriff has shown up at the Stoker house to ask about a missing teenager, and Uncle Charlie takes command of the situation.
This is from Stoker.
The Trovatore was playing on PBS.
Yeah, when I came home, my uncle was watching TV, so I watched it with him.
Just one moment. Il Trovatore, what is it? It's a farm movie.
No, it's an opera by Verdi. Would you like me to write it down?
I'm fine.
I do hope it's okay.
Well, his folks are a mess. Then again, I have a feeling that he'll turn up. Boys that age, well, you know how they are.
I'm sure I do. You will let me know if you hear anything, won't you?
Will do. Okay. Well, I'll be in touch.
Goodbye, Sheriff.
Goodbye, Sheriff.
Oh, by the way, did your housekeeper ever get in touch after leaving town so quick?
No. She didn't.
Strange how people can just disappear on you.
You would think that if there's that really creepy music playing, the sheriff would have heard that and would know something's going on
exactly.
Is wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
You would think.
Stoker has an extraordinary level of film craftsmanship.
Oh,
Photography, editing,
no doubt about
everything
it.
In it is spectacular. Here's the problem for me. It's not like watching a Hitchcock movie. It's like reading a dissertation about a Hitchcock movie. You're one step removed. It's trying so hard to be analytical and to be an homage that it doesn't quite live up to the basic Hitchcock Paradigm, right. which is scare me.
And yeah. if you haven't seen it, I would really recommend renting Shadow of a Doubt. Joseph Cotton plays the lead creepy uncle, and his name happens to be what, Bob?
Charlie.
Right. I have to say that it was entertaining in the moment, and then on my drive home,
it evaporated.
I thought, why did they spend all this money on this forgettable nothing movie? And I'm a fan of Kidman's. I mean, and Matthew Good was so great in Match Point, and he's done other things. Mia's great. What a waste of talent, I thought. I mean, stylish, yes, but it's all style, no substance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that film, again, is Stoker. Not such great reviews for it. How about a film that I'm sort of interested in, actually, Happy People, Steve Walker. It's Werner Herzog's new documentary set in Siberia, of all places. The controversial Werner Herzog.
It is, and he's a director who brought us Grizzly Man about a bear that eats a man. And
exploitative, by the way, but that's, yeah.
This is an interesting concept. And did he actually direct it, or did he?
No,
Dimitri?
It was already shot.
Well, he re-edited it from 4 hours down to 90 minutes.
See, I didn't have any of this background. But what's interesting and fascinating, actually, about it is we spend a whole year with these people in this bitter, hard scrabble village in Siberia, and we watch them sort of go through the seasons. I mean, the best summer they have is when the ice has almost melted. I mean, that is their summer, and then these harsh, harsh winters. And how this camera crew stayed with these people who are used to this kind of life, like they go out in a shack for the whole winter and catch their
ermine or whatever
sables actually,
yeah, sables,
and
yeah.
and they're, you know, sables are no bigger than a urban rat, right?
Oh, okay.
But that's what they do for 3 months, and it pays their bills so they can live the rest of the year. You see things you've never seen. And I've always said, any movie that takes me someplace,
yeah, exactly.
I would never go
exactly.
and have never seen. That's I'm all aboard for Happy People.
The title is maybe ironic. That, of course, is Werner Herzog, who shows up and adds his own narration, which is, as usual the case with Herzog, verges into the possibly pretentious. I mean, he talks about,
sure.
you know, when you're out in the middle of the forest with 10 feet of snow and you're 50 miles from civilization, it's you and your dog in a little shack, you are at one with the universe. Yeah, well,
right.
you're about to be dead with the universe, too. But that's where these are happy people in his estimation.
There's an extraordinary sequence where the hunter is going back, the winter is starting, the thaw is sort of starting, and he's got his huskies, right? This husky runs what, for 2 days?
Yeah,
solid,
100 miles in 2 days.
Chasing after this guy on his snowmobile.
Right.
The dog keeps up.
My gosh.
And he's there. He's not dead at the end. He's in the cabin where they live, and everyone's happy to see him. And he looks just like the dog you would have in your backyard in Overland Park.
But
as a clam,
but
right?
But the hunter does mention that the dogs they use rarely live past the age of 4 or 5.
Well, I wouldn't either.
But yeah, did you like it?
As a piece of ethnological documentary making,
right.
it's fascinating. You're thrown into another world, and it is beautifully shot.
Yeah, it really
gorgeous.
Is.
Gorgeous. You really,
yeah.
you know, it's a vast wasteland of snow and trees, but man.
And
beautiful.
Steve, I agree with your comment about take me to a different place,
mm-hmm.
and I'm already halfway around.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on second base.
I could watch
already.
A documentary about anything.
Yeah.
Or a narrative film about anything if it has something new to offer me.
There's a very funny YouTube clip of a Herzog impersonator reading Where's Waldo? if you want a few yucks,
I'll have to
check
find
it
that.
Out. It's really good.
Okay, from the Siberia and the snows of Siberia to the wilds of Florida, I mean, kids on spring break. Steve Walker, this film is titled Spring Breakers.
Yes, it is. And it's a strange movie that I shouldn't like, but I do. And let's set it up. Harmony Korine is the director. He came to acclaim for making a very graphic, gritty film about teenagers in New York called Kids
mm-hmm.
several years ago.
Yeah.
Then he spent his career up to now making these cult classic kind of films like Gummo and Julian Donkey Boy that if you meet someone who's a fan of Gummo, you want to second guess that friendship. His movies are macabre and gritty and gross and like dirty bathwater. Just think of whatever that conjures up for you. This is what he's been for me.
Mm.
But Spring Breakers is quite a different thing. He's got an incredible amount of talent, which perhaps we missed because of the content of his previous films. He's following four young women who rob a restaurant, a diner, to gather money to go to spring break, where they hook up with a white rapper with a grill in his mouth and cornrows, played by James Franco, in one of the performances of the year so far.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
He plays it. We'll hear him in a second. Plays this white rapper named Alien. But what's really interesting about this film, it is debauchery gone crazy. You talk about girls gone wild. This is just short of that, or if not, equal. But two of the young women are played by Disney Channel queens, Vanessa Hudgens and Selena Gomez, who can kiss any affiliation with Disney goodbye from this point forward.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you agree?
Oh, I do. And clearly they chose this project to divorce
very
themselves.
Very carefully. Yes. Yeah, no, yes,
you know, the interesting thing about this film is that if you look at it was sold as a lurid, exploitative, you know, teen college students on break movie.
Which
it definitely is. At the same time, you watch it and you realize that there's more going on here, that in a way, I think Corrine is actually trying to say something about a generation of people who have been raised on video games,
right,
rap, gangster rap, action movies, and Girls Gone Wild videos, and it has left them, in all but one case here, with no moral compass whatsoever.
You've said it beautifully, because I agree with you. I think that's what he is.
Did you like it, Bob?
Corrine's trying
you
to say.
You know what? This is one of those movies that I liked intellectually more than I liked it emotionally. With the exception of Franco, who is bitterly, bitterly funny. Any kid who ever tries to act like a rapper should watch this movie and then go home and hang his head in shame.
Let's listen to Franco, because I want our listeners to hear this.
Who are you?
My name's Aileen. My real name's Al, but truth be told, I ain't from this planet, y'all.
Alien?
They call me.
Why are you here?
I saw y'all in there. They like nice people. Thought maybe I'd bail you out.
Why?
Why not? Come on, y'all. Why acting suspicious? Get in.
Where are we going?
Go wherever you all want.
Cotty.
Got the right idea? Come on. I'll be your chauffeur. Y'all can play Beyonce.
Cynthia?
I just want to say that Vanessa and Selena did not do themselves a favor or their careers. There's
you didn't
been
like
so
it.
Much press. I hate to admit this. I did, and I liked it more after I listened to a half-hour interview with Corrine, the director, on iTunes, where he's explaining how he's trying to recreate a drug trip and all these other things. And so there's a lot more going on there. This is the reason the NC-17 rating was established.
Right.
I would put this in that category, Killer Joe and Paperboy. Why are we hung up about not doing this? Because this is beyond an R. For any, just to forewarn anybody who wants to go see this movie.
I'll say it again, it is skillfully made. It's just an amazing piece of work, cinematically.
And the violence is over the top. It's natural born killers on steroids.
Yeah.
So.
But you liked, that's what's so interesting.
That's the dichotomy there, absolutely.
And I think that's partly, you said earlier, because Franco is so good. And we should do a show about him and all the weird things he's doing. Because he's just fascinating to me, but not enough to go see him in Oz.
That film again is titled,
I want to see his gutsier, grittier, weirder things, you know.
That film again is titled Spring Breakers. Let's go to some quick local events. Bob Butler, what's happening at the library here? A lot of stuff's going on at the library.
This Sunday, 1:30, the Movies That Matter series is showing what is the movie that gave me the most trouble when I programmed it, Wings of Desire. Half the people who see this movie love it. Half the people who see it go, what? So there should be some nice conversations afterwards. But that's at 1:30 Sunday, Plaza Library.
Okay.
It's really good. I'm one who loves it, so.
There's also a premiere coming up here, the Jackie Robinson story.
Right, April the 11th. It's a fundraiser for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, which
town.
Is a terrific.
Harrison Ford's going to be in town, right?
That's right, for this. So go to 42kansascity.com and get detailed information about it. So it's definitely worth supporting. The Tivoli Performing Arts Series, National Theater Live. They'll have People on Thursday, April, that's the name of the production.
Which I'm going to go see because it's written by Alan Bennett, who's a wonderful playwright who wrote The History Boys, one of my favorite plays.
And that's April 11th at 7 p.m., Sunday, April 14th at 1:30. UMKC Department of Film and Media Studies, Science Fiction Classics. They'll be showing Eyes Without a Face, Tuesday, April 9th at 7 p.m.
And of all these films that are coming up in the weeks to come that haven't opened yet, what should I be looking forward to the most here?
The Angels Share.
Oh, wonderful. What One of the best movies of the year.
Yeah, me too. And it's coming in May. It's a Scottish film. It's about a guy who lives in Edinburgh whose girlfriend just had a baby, and he's trying to pull his life together despite every odd against him, and figures out how to hijack wine.
Okay.
It's great.
Okay. Again, you'll find a complete list of the films we talked about today, as well as our critics, three to see, their picks for the best art, independent, or foreign films now showing. You'll find all of that at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Monday on the program, there's Peanuts, Cracker Jack, and even some baseball to play. We'll be broadcasting live from Kauffman Stadium as the Royals prepare to play their home opener against the feared, fearsome Minnesota Twins. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.